The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Part 2, Chapter 13, Text 37, given by His Divine Grace, Dhanavir Das Vanachari.
Thus, it is worth hearing of His sublime character and activities. Please describe them. I'm very eager to hear. Persons who hear from a spiritual master with great labor and for a long time must hear from the mouths of pure devotees about the character and activities of pure devotees. Pure devotees always think within their hearts of the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead who awards His devotees liberation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, "The Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, was pleased to place His lotus feet on the lap of Vidura, because Vidura was very meek and gentle. Sage Maitreya was very pleased with Vidura's words, and being influenced by his spirit, he attempted to speak. Sri Manu said, speaking to his father, "O all-powerful one, O killer of all sins, I shall abide by your order. Now please let me know my place and that of the living entities born of me. O master of the demigods, please attempt to lift the earth, which is merged in the great water, because it is the dwelling place for all living entities. It can be done by your endeavor and by the mercy of the Lord." Maitreya said, "Thus seeing the earth merged in the water, Brahma gave his attention for a long time to how it could be lifted. Brahma thought, while I have been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated by a deluge and has gone down into the depths of the ocean. What can we do who are engaged in this matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. O descendant of Bharat, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation, as gigantic as a great elephant. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma with great Brahmanas like Marichi as well as the Kumaras and Manu began to argue in various ways. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. First of all, this boar was seen no bigger than the tip of a thumb, and within a moment, he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead?" While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, roared tumultuously like a great mountain. The omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated Brahmanas by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all directions. When the great sages and thinkers who are residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Boar, which was the all-auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord, they chanted auspicious chants from the three Vedas. jumping like an elephant. He entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. You know that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? All sacrifices, all knowledge is meant to reach Krishna. Vedasya sarvaya. Everything is meant for pleasing the Lord. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail. His hard hairs quivered. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hoofs and his glittering white tusks. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not limited in any way. As Brahma states in his Brahma Samhita, Anganyasya Sakalendriya Ritimanti Pasyanti Panti Kalyam Chiram Jiganti Anadachimaya Sarutvala Vigrahasya Om Mali Purjam Amam Dhyani. That any one of the organs or parts of the body of the Lord can act in any way he likes. In other words, he is not restricted. If he wants to see something, he doesn't have to use his eyes. He can use his ears or his legs. If he wants to fly, he can fly. In this case, even though he appeared in the form of a boar, he also flew. So the Lord is completely at will to do as he likes. Now this gigantic boar, just to recap, has come out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. The problem was that there was a big demon whose name was Hiranyaksha. And Hiranyaksha caused the earth to fall from her orbit. And the earth planet fell down to the bottom of the universe in the Garbhodak ocean. And all the demigods were concerned. After all, the planet Earth has her place in the orbit and she has her function. Well, they began to ponder, trying to figure out what to do, how to get the earth out. They didn't know. And the Lord is very responsive to his devotees' needs. Whenever the devotees are in great anxiety for something to do their service, then the Lord helps. He wants to make them happy and assist them because their only business is to serve him. So because Brahma and the other demigods were sincerely trying to serve the Lord, solve this problem of the fallen earth, the Lord appeared in the form of a boar. Continuing, he was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu and was therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the very Brahmins engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water. We know from the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are five elements called Mahabhuta, and each one of these elements has a particular characteristic. The ether has the characteristic of sound, air has the characteristic of touch, fire has the characteristic of sight, water has the characteristic of taste, and earth has the characteristic of smell. So Lord Boar, wanting to find the earth, he used the sense of smell to find it. Diving into the water like a great mountain, Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, "O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection." Lord Bor penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. The word Rasayana is sometimes interpreted to mean Rasatala, the lowest planetary system, but that is not applicable in this connection. According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the earth is seven times superior to the other planetary systems, namely Tala, Atala, Talatala, Vitala, Rasatala, Patala, etc. Therefore, the earth cannot be situated in the Rasatala planetary system. It is described in the Vishnu Dharma. Patala Muleshara Bhoga Samhatao Vinyasya Pado Pativim Chapipratha Yasya Pamano Na Vibhuvat Sojito Amatsu Mangalya Vivritaye Hari. Therefore, the Lord found the earth on the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, where the planets rest during the devastation at the end of Brahma's day. If you were wondering where the planets go, at the end of Brahma's day, they go down to the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. And then they are again brought up during his daytime. Continuing, Lord Bor very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then his anger glowing like the Sudarshan wheel, he immediately killed the demon Hiranyaksha, although he tried to fight with the Lord. Purport. According to Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, the Vedic literatures describe the incarnation of Lord Varaha in two different devastations, namely the Chakshusha devastation and the Svayambhuva devastation. This particular appearance of the Bor incarnation actually took place in the Svayambhuva devastation, when all the planets other than the higher ones, Jana, Mahara, and Satya, merged in the water of devastation. This particular incarnation of the Bor was seen by the inhabitants of the planets mentioned above. Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti suggests that the sage Maitreya amalgamated both the Bor incarnations in different devastations and summarized them in his description to Vidura. Translation. Thereupon Lord Bor killed the demon within the water, just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon, just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion, like that of a tamal tree, and thus the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offered respectful obeisances unto the Lord. All the sages uttered with great respect, "O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, all glories and all victories unto you. You are moving in your form of the personified Vedas, and in the hair holes of your body the oceans are submerged for certain reasons to uplift the earth. You have now assumed the form of a boar." O Lord, your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others, are in the touch of your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusha grass. In your eyes is the clarified butter. And in your four legs are the four kinds of fruit of activities. O Lord, your tongue is a plate for sacrifice. Your nostril is another plate of sacrifice. In your belly is the eating place of sacrifice. The eating plate of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice it is the holes of your ears. In your mouth is the Brahma plate of sacrifice. Your throat is the plate of sacrifice known as Soma. And whatever you chew is known as Agnihotra. Purport. The Veda bodies say that there is nothing more than the Vedas and the performances of sacrifice mentioned in the Vedas. They have recently made a rule in their group to formally observe daily sacrifice. They simply ignite a small fire and offer something whimsically, but they do not strictly follow the sacrificial rules and regulations mentioned in the Vedas. It is understood that by regulation there are different plates of sacrifice required, such as shruk, shruva, varhis, chatur hotra, ida, chamasa, pashitra, graha, and agnihotra. One cannot achieve the results of sacrifice unless one observes the strict regulations. In this age, there is practically no facility for performing sacrifices in strict discipline. Therefore, in this age of Kali, there is a stricture regarding such sacrifices. It is explicitly directed that one should perform Sankirtan Yajna and nothing more. The incarnation of the Supreme Lord is Yajneshvara, and unless one has respect for the incarnation of the Lord, he cannot perfectly perform sacrifice. In other words, taking shelter of the Lord and rendering service unto him is the factual performance of all sacrifices as explained herein. Different plates of sacrifice correspond to the different parts of the body of the Lord's incarnation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, it is explicitly directed that one should perform Sankirtan Yajna to please the Lord's incarnation as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This should be rigidly followed in order to achieve the result of Yajna performance. Text 37. The great devotees continue, "Moreover, O Lord, the repetition of your appearance is the desire for all kinds of initiation. Your neck is the place for three desires, and your tusks are the result of initiation and the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation. Your head is the fire without sacrifice. Your head is the fire without sacrifice, as well as the fire of worship. And your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. O Lord, your seven is the sacrifice called Soma Yajna. Your growth is the ritualistic performances of the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements of the Agni Shtoma sacrifice. Your bodily joints are symbols of various other sacrifices performed in 12 days. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifices called Soma and Asoma, and you are bound by Yajnas only." Purport. There are seven kinds of routine yajnas performed by all followers of the Vedic rituals, and they are called Agnishtoma, Atyagnishtoma, Ukta, Shodashi, Vajpeya, Atirata, Aptoryama. Anyone performing such yajnas regularly is supposed to be situated with the Lord, but anyone who is in contact with the Supreme Lord by discharging devotional service is understood to have performed all different varieties of yajnas. This means if one is engaged in devotional service, he's not required to perform all these type of yajnas because it's already concluded. And he's done them. In order to come to the stage of chanting Hare Krishna and being fully engaged in devotional service, all the other pious activities or rituals or austerities are understood to have been performed. He's visited all the holy places. He's taken bath in all the holy rivers. He's performed the austerities of meditation. So he doesn't have to worry about those things now. His only responsibility is to remain fully engaged in devotional service. If he does not remain fully engaged in devotional service, then he is obliged to perform all kinds of sacrifices. And they are very troublesome. It is not an easy thing to perform all these other kinds of sacrifices to become elevated. And the result is also not as great. One has to work his way up and gradually get free from the activities of material sense gratification, enter into the higher heavenly planets. It is not a very suitable system. Therefore, those who are endowed with greater intelligence, sumedha-saha, that word medha-saha means brain substance or intelligence. Those who have good brain substance in this age, they will worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has appeared as Lord Chaitanya. And by performance of the Sankirtan Yajna. In other words, those who don't have such good intelligence, they'll try to elevate themselves by so many other methods, possibly Vedic methods, sacrifice, or what have you. But they're not so intelligent. They don't know that the Lord has appeared and has given a very simple process. And the only sacrifice that He wants is for us to engage in the Sankirtan movement. Sankirtan movement means hearing and chanting about Krishna. We hear about Krishna from the self-realized souls, and then we tell others. And that is the Sankirtan movement. And engaging in other activities, such as deity worship, etc. But those things are all part of the Sankirtan movement. They are not separate from it. So the point is here that Srila Prabhupada didn't introduce so many Vedic yajnas and Vedic rules and regulations. He did that purposefully because he knew that in this age it would not be successful. Just like in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada tried teaching the devotees how to learn Sanskrit and he found it hopeless. And he gave up after some time. They couldn't learn their proper Sanskrit pronunciations and what have you. And one time when Prabhupada was asked by a disciple if there were any more rules and regulations for deity worship than Prabhupada had already introduced, and he said, "If I told you everything, all the rules and regulations, you would faint." Well, that is the truth. There are so many things that we are not able to do. Even now, even though our system of deity worship has become more elaborate than it was when Prabhupada first introduced it, still, there is so much more that could be done. The worship could go further and further. So we may endeavor in that way, but even more important is that we put our attention on spreading the Sankirtan movement, because that's what Lord Chaitanya wanted. And He's the Lord for this age. So our business then is to please Him. And how do we please Him? He wants that His holy name be spread to every town and village. We can take up that mission, how to spread to every town and village. The easiest way is book distribution. Because by distributing these literatures, they go everywhere. They go to every town and village. Prabhupada always used to comment how even without having gone to certain countries, but because the books had gone there, he was getting letters of appreciation. And we've seen how book distribution has had such a wonderful effect in our Iron Curtain countries and all over the world. So that is the sacrifice for this age, to chant and distribute knowledge of Krishna. Continuing, O Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are worshipable by universal prayers, Vedic hymns, and sacrificial ingredients. We offer our obeisances unto you. You can be realized by the pure mind, freed from all visible and invisible material contamination. We offer our respectful obeisances to you as the Supreme Spiritual Master of Knowledge in devotional service. Purport. The qualification of bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord, is that the devotee should be free from all material contaminations and desires. This freedom is called vairagya, or renouncement of material desires. One who engages in devotional service to the Lord according to regulative principles is automatically free from material desires. And in that pure state of mind, one can realize the personality of Godhead. Well, this question comes up often. How do we become free from desires? I've still got desires. I've been engaged in devotional service now for some time. Why isn't the process working? Why are my desires still there? Well, we have to continue. We have to continue following the process and be patient. Utsaha nischayat dharyat tatat karma pravartana. Enthusiasm, endeavoring with confidence and patience. The example of a newly wedded wife is cited. As soon as she gets married, she wants a child. Where's my child? But she cannot have a child immediately. She has to wait. She has to serve her husband. And then in due course of time, the child will be coming. And certainly there has to be service, enthusiastic service, determination, and patience. The love of Godhead will come, but it is a gradual process. We heard on Sunday Srila Prabhupada's lecture, he was describing how the different stages of devotional service develop. In the beginning, Shraddha. In the beginning there is some faith. And then from faith one associates with saintly persons. And then one takes up the activities of devotional service under the guidance of a spiritual master. It's initiated. And then after that, the gets rid of the unwanted, anartha nivritti. Unwanted habits are all washed away. And then after that, there is steadiness, it becomes firmly fixed in devotional service. Then it develops some taste for serving Krishna, then some attachment, then ecstasy, then prema. So it is a gradual process. We shouldn't try to rush, jump immediately. I want my bhava and prema immediately. And we have to pay the price. We have to go through the steps. Don't be patient. Go on serving. We have nothing better to do. What else is there to do? If you don't engage in devotional service, will you try to perform all these Vedic yagyas? Actually, we can't because we're not even qualified to perform Vedic yagyas according to our birth. The Vedic system was based on birth. So according to the Vedic system, we are born in Malecha families, at least many of us. We're immediately outcasts. We have no entrance into these brahminical activities. Or what else will we do? Perform fruitive activities, karmic activities of sense gratification or speculation, try to figure out the absolute truth by my pea brain. I have a little small brain and I'm going to try to figure out the whole the whole absolute truth. I can't even figure out my digestive system, what to speak of the whole universe and how to get out of the universe. So that's kind of silly. But why not engage in devotional service? If we're going to live forever, we never die. That I think we all can easily accept. But why not engage in devotional service? There's nothing better. And this is not just someone's opinion. This is stated through all throughout the Vedas. That devotional service is the best system. It's the best thing that one can do with his time. So even if it, if we have to be patient, it'll take some time. Another example is given of a young man, young boy. So when he's a young boy, he has no attraction for the opposite sex. But the potential to have sex attraction is there. And when he reaches a certain age, then suddenly he has attraction for girls. He doesn't know exactly where it came from. He didn't plan it. He didn't have to learn it at school. It just comes because it's inherent in his being, in that particular body. In the same way, the soul, a living being, has the inherent love of Godhead quality. That is our original nature. Now, because we are engaged in the healthy growth system of bhakti yoga, at a certain point, love of Godhead will appear. We won't have to try in any extraneous ways to bring it or anything. This devotional service, this bhakti yoga system, as given by the acharyas, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta, is the process. Just like that boy we gave the example. If he were to die, then he would not be able to exhibit his sex desire, so to speak. Similarly, if our spiritual life dies, then we will not develop love for Godhead. But as long as we keep it alive and healthy by following the regulative principles of devotional service, we should not think that these regulative principles are for neophytes and that I'm more advanced and I don't need to follow them now. And I'll make advancement in my own way by speculation or fruit of activities. No. There will not be any advancement that way. Just be wasting time. Continuing. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. Purport. The fortune of the earth planet is praised because of its being specifically sustained by the Lord. Its beauty is appreciated and compared to that of a lotus flower situated on the trunk of an elephant. As a lotus flower with leaves is very beautifully situated, so the world with its many beautiful mountains appeared on the tusks of the Lord Bore. So if we want to appreciate the beauty of the earth, rather than trying to do it directly, we should appreciate it in relationship with Lord Bore. Then there's nothing wrong with becoming absorbed in the beauty of the earth. Otherwise, if one tries to directly enjoy the beauty of the earth without its connection with the Lord, then one becomes bewildered and one then is not on the transcendental position. It's like there's so many nature worshippers who like to go and enjoy different aspects of nature, mountains and water and suns, all these type of things. But they're not making spiritual advancement because they don't understand the relationship of the mountains or the water or the sun with the Supreme Personality of God. The devotees are more interested in the artist than the creation. Whereas the impersonalists or the fruitive workers are more interested in the the product or the energy rather than the energetic. Continuing text 41. O Lord, as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, this earth is your wife, and you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potency, just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in the arni wood. So the earth is one of the seven mothers for all of us. We should be very respectful to Mother Earth. She's providing all of our necessities in the form of foodstuffs, grains, vegetables, and fruits. Just as a mother, our real mother, when we take shelter, when the living entity is put within the womb of a mother, then the mother, through her body, she provides all the ingredients necessary for growth and sustenance of the body. Similarly, Mother Earth does that. And we say Mother Earth, well, where's the father? There's no such thing as a mother without a father. That father is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aham Bija Pradapita. He's the seed-giving father. All those seeds that are growing within the body of Mother Earth are planted, are sown by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although we take credit that I'm taking seeds and putting them in, but we cannot create a seed. Why don't our great, proud scientists who are so confident in their ability, let them create one little seed. That's all. We challenge them. Make a seed of a lemon tree, or a seed of anything. If lemon tree is too difficult, maybe make, what's a less difficult tree? Yeah, just make one grass seed. Put it in and have one blade of grass come out. It's not very complicated. Just, you know, it's just got one green stalk coming out of it. You should be able to do that. I mean, after all, you can analyze all the ingredients of the blade of grass, can't you? With all your years of study and your big brains and your degrees and your microscope, I'm sure you can analyze all the ingredients of the blade of grass. So just take some chemicals, put them together, make a little seed, and then put it in the ground and let's see it grow. But you cannot do that. After all this time, all this energy has gone into these things, still you cannot even create a blade of grass. So why should we give you so much credit that you're going to be solving all the problems of death soon, and that you know everything about how creation took place, and you're going to create life in the future? You say that life was created in the past by chemicals, and you say that in the future you'll mix the chemicals and create life, but in the present you can't do it. Isn't that odd? Continuing. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe. By your energy you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. Purport. When a scientist discovers something impressive to the ignorant mass of people, the common man, without inquiry, accepts such a discovery as wonderful. But the intelligent man is not struck with wonder by such discoveries. He gives all credit to the person who created the wonderful brain of the scientist. The common man is also struck with wonder by the wonderful action of material nature, and he gives all credit to the cosmic manifestation. The learned Krishna conscious person, however, knows well that behind the cosmic manifestation is the brain of Krishna, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Dakshina Pukriti Suyate Sacharajanam. Since Krishna can direct the wonderful cosmic manifestation, it is not at all wonderful for him to assume the gigantic form of a boar and thus deliver the earth from the mire of the water. Actually, not only is Mother Earth the wife of the Supreme Lord, but actually every living entity is Prakriti and meant to be used, or shall we say, engaged in the service of the Lord as a female, as a wife serves her husband. She serves him as the enjoyer, and she assists by trying to please him. In the same mentality, we should all be thinking that I am feminine in relationship with the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Male. In this way, we will get free from this desire to try to lord it over and be the enjoyers. Here in the material world, both the men and so-called women are in this mentality, thinking, I'm the enjoyer. But actually, we're not the enjoyer, we're meant to be enjoyed by the Lord. Text 44. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly we are inhabitants of the most pious planets, the Jana, Tapas, and Satchalokas. But still we have been purified by the drops of water sprinkled from your shoulder hairs, by the shaking of your body. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon those conditioned souls. But just, we can think for a moment how some persons, when they're told about the Lord who appears as a boar, they say, a boar? The Lord? No, it's not possible. Can't appear as a boar. Why not? If he wants to come out as no bigger than the thumb and then expand into a big form, who can stop him? Why should he not have that ability? Even in the movies, I think they could probably do something like that, isn't it? They could project some image and make it grow, at least appear like that. So if they can do that, why can't the Supreme Lord, who created their brain, he can do whatever he likes. There's no limit. But the non-devotees, they always put so many limitations. We can't do this, and we can't have a form, and we can't do this, and we can't appear, and etc. etc. You know that story Prabhupada tells of the there was a Brahmin and a cobbler, and Narad Muni was passing on his way to Vaikuntha to see the Lord. And he stopped to see the Brahmin, and the Brahmin asked him where he was going. He said, I'm going to see the Lord Narayan. And he said, please, when you go there, ask him when I'll be liberated. And he also went to the cobbler, and the cobbler also asked where you're going. He said, I'm going to see Lord Narayan. He said, please ask when I'll be liberated. But when Narad Muni arrived at the abode of the Supreme Lord, he duly asked Lord Narayan when these two personalities would get liberated. And Lord Narayan said that the Brahmin will have to stay for many, many lifetimes more. And the cobbler will, this is his last birth, he'll be liberated in this life. But when Narad Muni went back to the Brahmin, he informed him that Lord Narayan said he would have to stay for many, many lifetimes in the material world. He was not yet free. Forgot one part of the story. When Narad Muni was there, he had a hard time understanding why the Brahmin was going to have to stay and the cobbler was going to get liberated, because cobbler is dealing with the skin of animals is considered muchi, the lowest occupation, basically. And certainly not in a clean state. And certainly they don't know Vedic knowledge and they don't follow rules and regulations of Vedic principles. So So he said, my Lord, I cannot understand this. Can you explain it? He said, yes. When you go and you tell them, if they ask you what I was doing when you came to see me, just tell them that I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Then you'll understand. So Narada Muni did that. And the Brahmin then, once he heard that he was going to have to stay for many lifetimes in the material, he was very disappointed. So, oh, no, I thought I would be liberated in this life. And what was the Lord doing anyway when you went there? And Narada Muni said, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmin said, oh, you didn't go see the Lord. No one can thread an elephant through the eye of a needle. Now I know you're just making up the whole thing. Please, don't talk to him. Then when he went to the cobbler, told the cobbler he'd be liberated this one life, the cobbler asked what the Lord was doing, and he said he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler was in ecstasy. He was so happy. He said, Narada Muni said, you believe that? He said, yes, why not? If he can place a whole gigantic banyan tree in one little seed this size, then what is the difficulty of putting an elephant through the eye of a needle for him? So that is the proper understanding. A simple kind of faith and understanding of the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Lord. So I'll just conclude here, read the end of this chapter, a few more verses. The sage Maitreya said, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. In this manner, the personality of God and Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water.